Hello and welcome to my show, Nutrition, Health, Perfect Weight and Well-being. I'm Dora Walsh and I've been working in the field of natural and functional medicine for over 14 years. I'm a qualified nutritionist and nutritional therapist, and I support my clients to overcome their chronic health concerns like hormonal imbalances, digestive problems, autoimmune concerns, gut health concerns, and more. You can find out more about me on the internet and also follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. Well, this week I'm going to be talking to a wonderful guest, and we're going to be talking about the reasons to go sober in October. Maybe you've had enough of drinking. Maybe you'd like to cut down for a while or cut down overall. Maybe you find it's making you feel depressed, sluggish. You're spending too much money. It's affecting your sleep, your energy, and your self-esteem and your mood. This week we're talking to Alexandra McRobert. She's a sober yoga girl and she's the founder of the Mindful Life Practice. You can find out more about her on her website, www.themindfullifepractice.com. It's great to have you on the show, Alexandra.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
I was really excited to hear about your story. I receive a lot of press releases and I can't always get back to all of them or many of them, but when I saw this, I really resonated because I took the sober journey many, many years ago, before it was fashionable to go sober. I used to go to the pub and ask for a glass of milk. We used to think I was crazy, but I just had enough of drinking. It didn't suit me. And that's why I'd love to hear your story and for you to give some tips and tricks to our health-loving audience that are wanting to embark on that sober journey, maybe just for October or maybe in the medium and long term. But before we go into that, tell us about your story and how you embarked on your sober journey.
Yeah, absolutely. So I am originally from Canada. I spent the majority of my 20s living in the Middle East, and now I'm in Bali, Indonesia. So I've been all over, and now I work full time doing yoga and sobriety, but obviously that wasn't the case many years ago. So when I first started drinking, I was, a typical teenager growing up in Canada in the same way. Like, I think drinking culture is really similar in Canadian culture, in UK culture, from what I hear from my clients in the UK. And it's just a culture where alcohol is a normal part of adulthood. It's a normal part of social occasions. It's a normal part of everything from Christmas to New Year's to birthdays to engagements, weddings, even funerals, right? Alcohol was all around me and it was everywhere. And so when I started drinking, I just thought it was the normal thing to do. And I was really struggling with my mental health. I started having mental health issues as soon as I really started drinking alcohol when I was around age 15, but I didn't see the connection between the two. So I was partying all throughout university. And then I accepted this job in the Middle East. And so I moved to Kuwait to be a school teacher. And it was in Kuwait where I ended up having this kind of mental health rock bottom. I was massively struggling with the culture shock and the transitions and the fact that, and in this place, alcohol wasn't legal. And so I was learning how to like make alcohol in my kitchen, and it was just not a good situation. And so I ended up hitting this mental health rock bottom in 2017. It was in the middle of 2017, and I was eventually diagnosed with bipolar disorder, and I was put on medication for bipolar disorder. And then I moved back to the Middle East, and this time I moved to the UAE. And the UAE is kind of like the party capital of the Middle East. And so all of a sudden, I'm in this culture where alcohol is totally normal, and it's normal to start drinking at noon on a Friday and drink all throughout the day and afternoon. And I was doing that every weekend, a few times a weekend. And I think I lived in the UAE. I think I only made it for like a year and a half before I hit this sort of second rock bottom where I knew I have to quit drinking. You know, I have a great job. I have a great apartment. I have everything about my life should be good. So why am I so unhappy? Why am I so anxious? Why am I so depressed? Why am I struggling with these mood swings? And I knew everything pointed to the alcohol. So my plan initially when all this happened was to just take 28 days off of drinking, 4 weeks. I thought it would be enough to kind of recalibrate me and help me learn how to moderate my drinking. And it wasn't until I think I was maybe 2 weeks into it, I had some pretty big withdrawals, some pretty big struggles in the beginning. And then I hit, you know, 14 days and I realized like, wait, my life is so much better now. I'm so much happier. I'm so much healthier. There's so many advantages to this sober life. And so, you know, here I am, I'm almost 3.5 years sober, and it's become my mission to help other people around the world. But in particular, I work with a lot of women, and it's become my mission to help them see that they too can live a happy and healthy life without alcohol. And I want to support women in making that transition.
This is an amazing story, and I'm sure many women and also men today can relate to what you're saying. You're right, definitely. The drinking culture in the UK is very similar to what you mentioned growing up in Canada. People start young, they'll go to the park and they'll be drinking bottles of wine, bottles of beer. It will be at parties. It's normal. It's part of our social life. But the problem is that then it can become a habit and it can become a crutch. And you can tip over the edge to be having it too much. And it's hard to control sometimes. So obviously you found that and you were experiencing some negative effects of the party lifestyle, which looks so wonderful on the surface, and you had that breakdown, you didn't feel great, and you've now managed to literally cut out alcohol out of your life for 3.5 years. You've been sober, and you're now helping other people. So it's a wonderful story. Let's talk about the people that are at the beginning of the journey that you help, or our listeners today, that would really love to cut out alcohol. They'd like to try Sober October, at least to start their journey and then see where they go and see how they can feel. Where should they start? How do they suddenly cut down? Do you just go cold turkey? What do you do?
You know, I think that's a great question. And I think for every person, it looks a little different, and there's not one specific way or rule book per se. And so I was someone who literally cold turkey ripped the bandage off. Like I was like, okay, today's day one. And I never looked back. There's a lot of people I meet who don't have a journey that's that linear, and they might do 30 days and then drink a little bit again, and then do another 30 day sprint, and then, you know, build up to 60 days. And then eventually one day get to that 1 year sober. And so I think for everyone, the path looks a little bit different. But what's important is just submerging yourself into the sober world. You want to submerge yourself with people that are making these lifestyle choices that are the same as you. You want to read as much as you can, learn as much as you can, listen to podcasts, join groups. Just get yourself submerged in communities that are on the same path as you. And it might not be linear. It might not be like you might end up having blips or relapses or whatever you call them. But as long as you're trying and setting that intention and moving on the sober journey, as one of my colleagues says, it's like you're practicing sobriety, right? You're practicing, and then one day it's going to stick.
I love what you said about communities. It sounds like people need to get a group around them to support them in what they're doing to keep them strong. Is that right?
Absolutely. And that's been one of the key pillars of my journey. That's what I did. I joined an online community, and it was a Facebook group where I was posting in it. In the beginning, I didn't post at all. And then I started posting almost every day. And I just loved connecting with other people around the world similar to me. And now within the community I run, we not only have WhatsApp groups, we also have live Zoom calls every single day. And we have these small groups of under 15 women that start every single month working on this sober challenge. And I think what they love the most is just being in that small group of women who are in the exact same stage and phase of them, who they can really relate to. Because as so many of us, we're often surrounded by drinkers and we don't know any sober people in our real life, and our real life can get a little lonely. And so that's the beauty of an online community.
Now, this is great. Now, just to mention your online community, is that on Facebook or WhatsApp?
Yeah. So on the mindfullifepractice.com, you can find our Sober Girls Yoga 30-day challenge. And that's where most people start out. Now, if you do, just if you're not ready to start the 30-day challenge yet, we do have a Facebook group called Sober Girls Yoga with, I think, about 1,500 members right now. And that's just a Facebook support group. You can post, you can engage with the posts. I share sober news and articles and prompts every day. But if you do want to get that accountability and get into that community, which I highly recommend, you can find the 30-day challenge on our website. And we run small little WhatsApp groups from that. So each month we'll start a new group. We just started our new group on October 1st, but you could still jump in. You're only a couple of days late for that one. But we always start up a little special small WhatsApp group for just the 15 members. And then there's a few different co-leaders. So I'm always leading the challenge, but then I have a few assistant facilitators who have graduated from my training programs who support me in leading the groups.
Sounds wonderful. So they can find out more about that on the mindfullifepractice.com. Now,
yeah.
About people, obviously people have old friends, friends from college, friends from school, family members, siblings, and you might be joining a group to get that kind of that solidarity and support to help you to go sober. But you're not going to maybe cut off your other friends, or do you? What do you when they're around you and they're trying to encourage you to have a drink?
So that's a great question. So I think, again, for every single person, it is totally different. And it also depends on the strength of the relationship and the nature of the relationship. And I say that because when I was quitting drinking, I had just moved to Abu Dhabi, right? This new city. And the people that I was surrounding myself with were party friends. They were party people. And when I told them that I was quitting drinking, I got a lot of, you know, can't you just cut back? Why do you need to quit altogether? Just have one. And it was a really difficult thing for me to navigate because I was not ready to be vulnerable and say, look, I'm really struggling with this mental health issue and I need to stop drinking for that. Like, that was not something that I really felt like I could talk to or approach my friend group with. I didn't feel like I had the support around them. And so in that case, that friend group eventually dissolved. You know, we're still connected. They're wonderful people, but truly what we had in common is that we like to party on the weekends and on weeknights, which we no longer had in common anymore when I decided to get sober. And then on the other hand, you know, I have friends from high school who I travel back to Canada and, you know, they'll make me alcohol-free mimosas to host me at their apartment, you know, and they go out of their way to make me feel included in my sobriety. And those are the types of friendships that have stuck throughout the transition. So it really depends on, you know, if your friends can really support you and if they can move through this transition with you, and if your friendship goes deeper than just drinking buddies. And you just might find, like, it was kind of a mutual thing with my friend group in the Middle East, was like, once I was sober, I was like, I'm actually kind of finding these conversations boring. You know, we're sitting around gossiping. I don't really want to come out and be part of this anymore. And so it really depends on sort of who you're around and the nature of your relationships and your own journey. And you might find that you just evolve away from certain people, or maybe your relationship changes a little bit, and there's nothing wrong with that. And in that transition, I also found that I was seeking out new friends who I shared different common interests with. Like, I joined a choir and I started to get really involved in the gym. So I found people that had passions and interests that were aligned with the new version of me.
Sounds like, as you became sober, you actually created a new identity and a new life for yourself. You transitioned away. It wasn't just cutting the drinking. It was cutting a lot of other things and creating new habits, new social life, new friends, new activities, new hobbies.
Absolutely. And I think that's the biggest misconception when it comes to sobriety, is people think that it's just about putting down. It's just about stopping drinking. But the stopping drinking is actually the starting. The stopping drinking is the starting point for everything else. You know, for me, it was like I stopped drinking, and then I all of a sudden it was like I was waking up from the matrix, and I was like, why am I sleepwalking through my life? Why am I making these choices? Why am I, you know, I had a pretty extreme transition, right? I was a grade one school teacher, and now I'm the CEO of a company, and I work remotely and travel and live in Bali. And it's like my life completely transformed when I had this wake up call of this is not who I want to be anymore. And I think a lot of people go through transitions like that when they quit drinking.
Now let's talk about the benefits of going alcohol free. We've talked about a few of the emotional things and the support group and getting a new life and new interests and new friends, and while still maintaining in old friends or maybe letting go of a few of them that you've kind of transitioned away from. Let's talk about physical health, financial health, mental health. Can you dig in a bit more into how going alcohol free can support our physical health and the other health that I've mentioned?
Yeah, absolutely. So the most interesting thing I've found, the deeper I've gotten into the sober world and the more learning I've done, like that's one of the key things, is to really read books, read articles, get engaged, and almost like start to educate yourself out of this habit or this addiction or whatever you refer to it as. But the more that I've learned, you know, there's this myth that alcohol in small, moderate amounts can be good for you, but there's actually research and studies coming out that there's actually no safe amount of alcohol when it comes to heart health. The World Health Federation just released a study. There's no safe amount of alcohol when it comes to our heart. There's also been studies lately that alcohol is a known carcinogen, and so it can be causing cancer, and it can also lead to mental health problems. Like in my case, it was triggering me to have bipolar episodes. It can lead to depression and anxiety. And there's just so little awareness and education out there about how directly linked these things are. And so alcohol consumption is so normalized. And in the case of, you know, myself, when I walked into a counselor's office in my 20s and said I was really struggling with my mental health, I find it surprising that no one said to me at that time, you should quit alcohol, knowing what I know now about alcohol being a depressant. It impacts how your brain is feeling. And so there's just so many mental and physical health benefits. You know, in my case, since going alcohol free, I've pretty much reduced all of these mental health symptoms, and I don't experience the symptoms of the mood disorder the way that I used to.
You're absolutely right. I remember when I was much, much younger, there were times when I, you know, when you're 18 and you go out with your friends and you're having alcohol and it's a party, everyone would feel really happy. And I, it would just make me feel, I just wouldn't feel good drinking. It just didn't feel good. Like everybody was doing it. But I knew then that it was affecting how I felt, my mood the next day. I'd feel really low. And I kind of made that correlation. No one said it to me, but I'm quite a sensitive person. I just knew it was the alcohol. So people need to make that correlation, because there are many people that are suffering depression or anxiety. And I'm not saying there aren't other causes, but this should be one of the first things they're considering, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. And that's amazing what you shared just then about you being so self-aware of how the alcohol was making you feel at such a young age, because it took me years to figure that out. But I do also, looking back on everything, and so now I'm not only alcohol free, but I'm also now gluten free and caffeine free and dairy free and sugar free, like a whole bunch of huge transitions. And it's amazing, because now when I have one thing in me, like if I accidentally eat, you know, sugar by mistake, or I accidentally eat gluten by mistake, I can feel that impact that it has on my system almost immediately. But I think back then, because I had so many different things swirling around in me, like these, you know, venti Starbucks and these, you know, sugar binges, and then these alcohol drinking nights, that I didn't know what was making me feel bad. I just knew that I felt bad.
Yeah, it sounds like you're totally detoxed now of everything. And when the cleaner your body becomes, the more sensitive you become to what you put in your body. And then you know actually intuitively if it's good or bad for your health. So it might sound not good to people that you become more sensitive, but really we all need to become more sensitive in terms of understanding what suits us. And it's almost like become blind in the body and not realizing the impact of what these things do to us and our diet, our the alcohol, everything. So it's great that you've had that realization. What about your energy? Are you since you've become sober, do you feel like you have more physical energy? Do you feel that you look different? Is your weight changed? Is your health better?
Yeah, it was like a night and day transition for me. So I, at the time when I did quit drinking, I was spinning, doing spin classes regularly. I think that's, no, it was before I became a bar instructor. So I was not yet teaching bar, but I was regularly practicing spinning and I was teaching yoga. And then from the moment when I quit drinking, I decided to start training to become a spin instructor. I started training to become a bar instructor. And I was at the gym, every single day because I just loved it. It helped me release stress in a way other than drinking. It kept me busy and it kept me focused. And within, 60 days, people started noticing a transition in my, I just looked healthier. And my skin looked healthier and I looked happier. And people were coming up to me all the time, that I worked with asking me, like, what are you doing differently now? And by that point, once I hit 60 days, I was really proud to say that I quit drinking and that was my transition. But yeah, it had quite a dramatic impact on my health.
Yeah, we'll be back to talk a lot more about your sober journey and the reasons for going sober in October after a few messages from our commercial partners.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltz know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries, and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltz, part of a network of 50 RegenX clinics worldwide where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltz. Life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
You're listening to Dora Walsh on UK Health Radio on my weekly show, Nutrition for Health, Perfect Weight and Wellbeing. I'm here talking to Alexandra McRobert, sober yoga girl, founder of the Mindful Life Practice. You can find out more about her and her business on themindfullifepractice.com. Now, Alexandra, you were talking about all the benefits. You talked about the mental benefits, the emotional benefits, and also the physical benefits of going alcohol-free and feeling that transformation and also other people sensing that there was a change in you because I guess you looked better, you had better energy, you were more energetic. I've heard about this thing called alcohol face. Have you heard of it?
What is it?
Alcohol face. When people drink too much, it kind of affects how they look. And it's called alcohol face. There's another thing called dairy face. It's like when people
have,
it does affect how your face looks, even the structure of your face and the shadows under the eyes. And alcohol face, it has a certain look as well. Did you feel that your face changed?
Absolutely. And that was the most significant thing that people saw within me. I think, my face when I was drinking alcohol was just almost like puffy because alcohol is toxic for you, right? And so it would make my face swell. I would have like bags under my eyes, especially when I can remember, you know, a big night out and then coming into work the next day and people could see that I was hungover. Like people could see that I had had a big night the night before. And when I got sober, it was like my face just, all of that swelling just disappeared. And it was, I just started radiating like health, this like look of health.
Yeah, it sounds wonderful. And what are the people that you work with in your groups? What do they report back in terms of the results they're getting of going sober in their looks or in their mindset? Have they had any radical transformations?
Yeah, the transformations have been absolutely incredible. Actually, at one point there was one group of women putting side by side photos of their transition in 30 days. And it's like they're eyes are brighter. You can see that they're happier. They're more grounded. They're more at peace with who they are on the inside. And that just radiates to the outside when you have that self-confidence and that self-esteem. And it just has a ripple effect in so many areas of people's lives. Like people, once you stop drinking, you might start home cooking, or in my practice, hopefully you're doing the daily yoga practice as part of the 30-day challenge, but women are finding that they're becoming more active. They're getting out for walks. They're finding other ways to de-stress. And another big one is money, right? We spend so much money on alcohol, and for each person, it is a different amount, right? Because we all have different drinking habits. But a lot of people, if they start tracking how much they spent on alcohol in a day, put it into one of those tracker apps, they might find that it's thousands of dollars a year because, you know, we have to think about going out to the pub and ordering the drinks and the hangover food, the taxis, the event tickets, all of that money that goes into partying. You know, you save it up and then you have it for something else, like a vacation or counseling or coaching or building your business. In my case, I was able to save so much and invest in starting my business. So there's just so many tremendous benefits that my community has seen. And that's one of my favorite things of running these challenges is watching those real life-changing experiences. Like women change the entire trajectory of their lives through these 30-day challenges.
It must be so fulfilling that you're helping them and supporting them to do that. Now, going back to a couple of things you said that so many people that you've spoken to in your groups have said now they gave up alcohol, they felt more confident, they had more self-esteem. Why do you think that is?
I think it's a number of factors. I think, first of all, when you're putting healthier things into your body, you feel better about yourself naturally. There's also a big effect that people talk about called hangxiety. I don't know if it's actually been studied, but it's basically the idea that hangovers induce anxiety or panic attacks. And I know when I would come, I'd be waking up from a big night out, I would be panicking about, you know, what did I say? What did I do? Did I offend that person? Do those people still like me? You know, did those friendships that I built last night, are they still strong this morning? And I would have so much anxiety and worry about everything that happened the night before. And now that I'm alcohol free, I'm able to see everything with clarity and also able to just let go of the things that cause me stress and anxiety. Like I mentioned earlier, the friend group that wasn't really making me feel the best about myself, you know, I end up letting that friend group go. And so there's just a whole bunch of transformations that happen that make people just feel more confident to be who they are.
So interesting. But I've seen it. I'm not trying to confront you, but sometimes people seem to go towards alcohol because they have low self-esteem or low confidence issues, don't they?
Absolutely. I think I was the an example of that, in that I had a lot of anxiety. So I thought alcohol would help me feel less anxious in social environments. But what people don't realize is that alcohol is actually making that worse. It's making, like, if you're going to alcohol as a coping mechanism for your low self-esteem or your anxiety or whatever you're struggling with, it's like, there's an author in the sober world, I can't remember who it is, she says drinking alcohol is like pouring gasoline on your anxiety. And it's so true. It just amplifies whatever is going on with you. So if you're feeling like you're lacking self-confidence or your low self-esteem, or you're feeling anxious, the best thing to do is to find another outlet that's going to help build you up and make you feel better about yourself and stronger, like, you know, a sober community or a community of women that are just going to help you be the best version of yourself instead of continuing to just pour gasoline on your anxiety and make it worse.
Yeah. And a lot of people use alcohol as a prop or as a something to, they think is going to help them, because maybe when they go out in a social situation, they're shy or they feel they don't have much to talk about or they don't fit in, and they think it's going to loosen them up. But really, they're never dealing with the real problem or the real issue, which is maybe them needing to work on themselves and their own personality and their own sense of self-esteem and who they are. And this is all about self-development, really, when you move away from alcohol, isn't it?
Absolutely.
You told me that you use yoga to support you in your sobriety. Is that right?
Yes. So for myself, I practice yoga every single day, and my 30-day sober challenge includes a daily yoga practice as part of it.
So what kind of yoga are you doing? Is it mental yoga or is it physical yoga or both?
That's a great question. So I teach several different types of yoga. I teach everything from beginner hatha yoga to vinyasa yoga to meditations to a yin practice, which is more about getting into the tissues and the ligaments. And in my challenges, I offer a wide range. So I have pre-recorded classes of several different styles of yoga. And the beauty in this is that you can find whatever works for you, whatever resonates most with you, and whatever level you're at to help support you on your journey.
Okay. And how is it that you feel that yoga helped you with this journey? What is it that it's giving you?
Yeah, absolutely. So yoga for myself played a massive role in my mental health journey, even way back before I got sober. I did a 30-day yoga challenge in my 20s when I was first experiencing these mental health symptoms. And I didn't understand the science of how yoga worked back then. I just knew that it worked. And so I kept coming back. And so yoga has been a deep part of my life ever since then. You know, I did my yoga teacher trainings, and when I got sober, it became this crucial support for me in my own sober journey. And again, I didn't know the science behind it. I just knew that it worked. And so I kept coming back. And now that I've been doing it for, you know, 2.5 years, I've been leading women through these sober challenges, I know a bit more about why it works. And so I would say there's 5 key reasons that yoga can help us in our sobriety. And the first is that it balances our nervous system. So yoga supports us because of its ability to impact the nervous system and bring us stress relief. It also can affect our brain chemistry. So it can alter the biochemistry of the brain more than regular exercise. It stimulates the relaxation response. It brings us this sense of balance, of stimulation, and it releases endorphins and adrenaline. It also brings our attention to the present moment, and present moment awareness is a key element of relieving a lot of the symptoms related to our mental health concerns, including anxiety and depression. It can also help us cultivate a sense of self-awareness without judgment. And that's really important for people that are feeling like low self-esteem or self-conscious. Yoga can help us get this distance away from ourself and help us take a step back and observe our moods and practice self-awareness. And then we can apply those skills off our mat as well. And then the last thing it can do to help us is it can help us have an embodied experience. And embodiment is a key reason that yoga can impact our sense of well-being. And these insights can affect our emotional balance and our mental health.
When you say an embodied experience, do you mean like really feeling you're well seated in your body, rather than kind of, a lot of people go slightly out of body because they're stressed out, they don't want to be here, then maybe they get into alcohol. But do you mean being fully in your body, or what is it? Was it something else that you mean by an embodied experience?
That's exactly what I mean. Being in your body, being present in the moment, because so many of us have so much stress happening. We have so many things on our to-do list, you know, the laundry, the groceries, the kids, the stress at work, the stress at home, the finances, whatever is on our plate, that we won't even be in the moment. And sometimes you'll even, like, you know, for example, drive from one place to another and not even remember the span in which you were driving there because you're so dissociated from the moment. And so yoga leads us to that ability to get embodied in ourselves, in our bodies, in the moment, in the practice. And then if we practice that over and over again within the container, the safe space of our yoga mat and our yoga class, we can start to do that in our real life as well.
It's a great alternative to alcohol, isn't it?
Absolutely. And it has just been key for me. And I'm so fortunate now to be able to do it for my work and also be able to do it for my own self-practice. So I do my own 90-minute practice every single day. And then I'm able to get on Zoom and support other women in learning the techniques as well. And I just think it's transformative.
Now, when you became sober and you just did it cold turkey, sometimes people that give alcohol, they might start on other things like smoking tobacco or other things. Were you ever tempted to do that? And does that ever happen to anyone that you've spoken to on their sober journey?
So yes, it's really common. It's referred to as addiction transference. And someone else I met called it addiction whack-a-mole. Do you guys have the whack-a-mole games in the UK? Do you know what I'm talking about when I say that?
Maybe. I call it whack-a-mole.
It's an arcade game where this mole pops up and it's like popping up really fast and you're just trying to whack it.
You just have to keep on whacking it and it never stops and you can never win.
Exactly. And I love that metaphor. Someone said that once on my podcast and it stuck with me because that's really what it is. It's like, if you don't get to the root cause of what's really going on, then you're just going to be playing addiction whack-a-mole. It's just going to be this thing and then that thing and then the other thing. And so I actually went through something really recently with my own. So I quit drinking. I got really, really healthy. Things were going really, really well for me for a while. And then I ended up getting into what I think was my next addictions, which I was really struggling with a coffee addiction. And then it became a sugar addiction. Like I got really into mocktails and alcohol-free drinks. And then I got that addiction. And so when I said earlier that I'm, you know, now gluten-free and dairy-free and sugar-free and free of all these things, that's a really recent thing that I've just implemented because I was really struggling with that was like my next coping skill. And it's almost like you're constantly peeling back layers of an onion, you know, like and no one is ever going to be 100% healed, but we just have to be committed to being on that healing journey and being able to look at ourselves and realize, you know, this is not serving me. And what can be a healthier thing that I can put in place that's going to support me to be the best version of myself. And so for myself, it's now pivoted into like, okay, I need to get back into my cardiovascular exercise and get back into spinning because that was really supporting me back when I first got sober. And so I think it's just constantly having the awareness to look inwards and see if you're coping in unhealthy ways in any areas of your life and how you can keep building on healthy habits so that you can thrive.
Yeah, I can totally see that. Now, you're living in Indonesia now, is that correct?
Yeah.
And is there a big culture of drinking there?
So it depends on where you are in Bali. So I'm in Bali and it was a life dream of mine to come and live here and work here. And so when I started the online business, I built it up for about a year and a half and then I was able to quit my teaching job. And 3 months into it, I was like, man, I got to move to Bali. And the place for me in Bali is Ubud. And Ubud is kind of like the yoga capital of Bali, I would say. So it's kind of like this little village in the middle of Bali where there's like full of yoga studios and everyone here is on this like spiritual healing journey. Ubud actually means medicine. So in this particular part of Bali, there's not a big drinking culture. I don't really see alcohol very often, very rarely. When I do see it, it's like tourists, I can tell, that are just in town and having some drinks on vacation. But when you do get down to other parts of Bali, there is a drinking culture. Like, for example, there's one little beach town called Sunur, which I've been down to quite a few times in the past few weeks. I actually went down to see a doctor for something. And I found when I was walking around there, there were tons of like beer pubs with a bunch of men watching sports games along the side of the road. Like, that seemed to be the culture down there, which you'd never see up in the part where I live. And there's another part called Canggu, which seems to be more of like sort of the party young city kind of vibe place. So I would say there is drinking culture in certain pockets of Bali, but the place where I've chosen to be supports my sobriety, and I'm very fortunate for that.
What if you decided to move to Canada or go to the UK or America? Do you feel you'd be able to sustain your sober journey? And do you have any tips for people that aren't in a place like Ubud or a place that isn't big on drinking and they have those temptations and those people around them? What are your tips for them in terms of going sober?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I do think I could sustain my sobriety, because for my first 2-ish years of sobriety, maybe a year and a half, I was living in the Middle East. Still, I was living in Abu Dhabi, which was like party kind of central. So I know that it's a lot harder when you're in a culture or community where drinking is more common. And what I would say in the early days is, if you feel in the very beginning like you need to bow out of social events or not go to parties because alcohol is going to trigger you, then don't be afraid to do that. You know, just take care of you and prioritize yourself. So that's the first thing I would say. And then I would also say that once you do feel confident in yourself, once it starts to stick, see if you can be open and honest with people, because most peer pressure I would find would come from people who didn't truly understand what was going on with me. And if I was giving excuses like, oh, I'm going to drive or whatever, whatever, then I would get faced with drinking pressure. But if I just openly said to people, look, I'm struggling with my mental health, and so I've decided to quit drinking, the pressure would kind of disappear. And I know that's not, like, it's easier said than done. And for some people, speaking that openly and honestly would be really not comfortable for them or scary. And so only share if you feel ready to. But I've found that the honesty and the sharing has helped a lot in my loved ones understanding and supporting me.
And also, to be honest, there's nothing wrong also if you didn't want to say, oh, I'm struggling with mental health, because some people might not feel able to do that. And some people just say, I don't like drinking. There's nothing wrong with that. Some people like chocolate. Some people don't like ice cream. Some people actually just do not like drinking.
Yeah, totally. So just sharing whatever, finding a confident way to express yourself and to stay strong in those moments of peer pressure, I think is key. Whatever that is, whether it's sharing the truth of what's going on with you or just something as simple as I don't like drinking, that's perfect as well.
Because the truth is, I guess you don't really like drinking anymore. You know it doesn't suit you. Yeah, it's so good that you can make yourself vulnerable. Not everybody has been able to do that, but that is really something to be admired, because it takes a lot of courage to say something like that, Alexandra.
Oh, thank you. Yes.
Now, we're going to be back with a lot more from Alexandra McRoberts, Sober Yoga Girl from themindfulpractice.com, after a few messages from our commercial partners.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltzer know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries, and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltzer, part of a network of 50 RegenX clinics worldwide, where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltzer. Life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
We're here listening to Dora Walsh on UK Health Radio on my weekly show, Nutrition for Health, Perfect Weight and Wellbeing. I'm talking to Alexandra McRobert, Sober Yoga Girl, founder of the Mindful Life Practice. And you can find out more about that on themindfullifepractice.com. Alexandra, you founded this practice where you help people go through these 30-day challenges. Can you tell us a bit more about what you do and kind of people that work with you, what the challenge is about? Is it difficult? How many people are in the group? And does it just take 30 days or do you have longer challenges? Maybe you can talk us through what you provide within your company to help people on their sober journey.
Yeah, absolutely. So I started the Mindful Life Practice in March of 2020. Well, I started it a few months prior, but then it really took off in the pandemic when everyone was at home and everyone was coming together on Zoom to practice yoga together. And then I started running a program called Sober Girls Yoga, and that quickly became my biggest and most popular program. And so it's evolved, it's taken many different shapes and forms over the different years. And now what we do is called the Sober Girls Yoga Challenge to Recovery Program. And so the initial starting point is this 30-day challenge, and we start it every single month. Every month, I lead the challenge, and I have a few assistant facilitators. And what the program consists of is a once-a-week meeting with me, led by me, and that includes a check-in where people share how they're doing, a meditation, and then a journal prompt, and then a discussion. And then there's a once a week yoga practice that's led by one of my yoga teachers. So I run online yoga teacher trainings, and I've certified over 100 people as certified yoga teachers. And so one of my trained teachers will lead that yoga practice once a week. And that takes place over the course of 30 days. We also have daily on-demand yoga practices that I filmed. And there's daily journal prompts with quotes and reflections, and we're following a journey through the chakras. And so that is the first 30 days. And then there is an option to extend it to 60 days, which is still also led by me. And then there's a new program called the 108-Day Recovery, which has been launched by another one of my teachers that I trained called Kathy Charles, and she's located in the States. And that's a four-month program for emotional sobriety. So that's long-term support. So basically, women move through this. They can just do 30 days and say, you know, that's it. Or they can extend to 60 days. And then that four-month 108-day recovery program. And then that would take them to 6 months sober. And from there, we have the program called the Deep Dive into Sober Yoga, which is what is training people to one day lead the challenges alongside me. So they get coaching training, they get yoga teacher training. And so eventually it would extend to a full year recovery program. And then we have many women that have stayed on for life in the community. And within the greater community, the Mindful Life Practice, we have men and women. So this Sober Girls Yoga Challenge program is specifically for women, but we do have men and women in the greater community. We have sober and not sober people. We offer yoga classes all throughout the day, online, on Zoom. And so you can also just join us and drop in for one yoga class if you aren't ready yet to commit to the whole program.
Sounds like you have all different levels, from the very first level of the 30 days to building up to 60 or 108 days, or even the whole year program, which is this kind of extended support, getting you ready to kind of really keep that going for life. Is that right?
Absolutely. And I think the key thing in the 30-day offering is that, you know, for a lot of people, saying I'm going to go a year sober is like terrifying. That's a huge commitment. That's a huge chunk of time. So like me, for example, I could have never said that I was going 1 year at that point. And so that's the beauty in offering just the 30-day chunk. 30 days seems super attainable. It seems super realistic. You can fit that into your life. You know, you find a good time that works for you where you don't have big events or social occasions. And then once you get that momentum going on and under you, I would say like 80% of the women typically extend for at least 60 days. And within there, usually, you know, 70% of them are in for the full 108-day program. And people just find that once they get that momentum, they're feeling good, they're looking better, they just want to keep going. But for a lot of people, 30 days is a really doable place to start.
When you, with your 108-day program, is there a reason why it's 108 days? Is 108 a special number?
That's a great question. It is a special number. So it is considered a sacred number in the tradition of yoga. And the mala beads that a lot of yoga teachers wear have 108 beads. And so they're used for a prayer, a mantra repetition. So you can count the beads as you're practicing a meditation where you're repeating a mantra. And there's also a lot of appearances of 108 in the natural world that are considered auspicious or really special that make it a unique number.
And I really appreciate you coming on the show this week, talking about the reasons to try to stay sober in October. I really hope listeners, you manage it. Definitely check out Alexandra McRoberts, Sober Yoga Girl, themindfulpractice.com, and hopefully you'll come on the show again.
Thank you so much, Dora, for having me. I really appreciate it. And it was really wonderful to talk with you and to share my story.
Thank you so much.